Today, I'm going to talk about narcissism, and I've done several podcasts on this in the past, but it has some kind of form, which is healthy, you know, when it comes to your ego and your self-image. And the word gets tossed around a lot, playfully, sometimes, you know, just to say it to somebody, but majority of the time, the people really don't have the narcissistic personality disorder. The disorder is actually very real for some individuals where it affects their whole lives. And many times we have family members that have it and we don't realize it until you become an adult. And the worst is a parent who has this disorder. Let me just start with some of the basics, okay? Some of the traits of a narcissist. They could be your aunt, your uncle, your father, your grandma, somebody close to you. That's when it does the most damage to the individual. It's somebody who you are in constant contact with. Because one thing you got to realize, the narcissist needs a supply. They need to have people who will constantly be cherishing them, or they need, whether it's negative or positive, they need that constant attention. And once they got their grasp on you, they won't let go. You know, even if you fight and you tell them, you know, get the hell away from me, they will constantly come up with something to try to draw you back in. And because they need that supply, they are always looking ahead to make sure they have several people in case one decides to fall away. And that's their biggest fear, actually, is to not have anybody there, you know, going to the grocery store, talking to the checker, talking down to the checker, and sometimes they don't think they're talking down. What they'll do is brag. Oh, well, you could carry my bags out to my BMW outside. You know, that stuff like that. It's still, you know, talking down to the other person, but they don't see it as that. They don't see it. And that's another sign too. If they run into somebody of a different race, they just assume they're idiots, you know, assume they're beneath them and things like that. When they do speak to, they're always talking about their wonderfulness, how great they are at all times. It doesn't matter what the situation is. You could be talking about to somebody and they're saying, you know, I just got this job, and I applied for this job 3 years ago, and I've done my best to get it, and they finally accepted me. And then they'll go, what is it? Oh, you know, I'm working in this office, and I bring blueprints up for the architects. Okay, let's just say that. I make up blueprints for architects that they can look at, or you design the plans. And before you can finish describing your job, they'll be like, well, I worked for an architect, and I know three famous architects, and da-da-da-da, and it will switch. The conversation will switch to the narcissist. That, too. That's part of the empathy. Like, they really don't care that you got a new job. They could give a shit. All they're hearing is, oh, architect. Well, I got one better. You know, I'm a one-upper. I got one-up on you. So those are some of their little traits that they have too. They do a lot of name dropping. Not all narcissists do this, but it is a big warning sign when they start name dropping. And then, like, when something happens to other people, like I was saying, the empathy part, they know what to say. They'll say, oh, you poor thing. Oh, I feel for you. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that happen. But there's a sense of where it's not authentic. It's not authentic at all. You know, if somebody, their reaction to people's pain is a big thing too. Now, when it comes to families, a family situation and growing up in the family with a narcissist. It could be one or two. Chances are if there's one, there's another one somewhere. It's really difficult, especially when you don't know what you're looking at, because a lot of times the victims, and I call them victims because they are the ones who are being abused by the narcissist. The narcissist may not feel like they're being abusive, but they are. They're playing mental games with the individual, because all they're caring about is covering up their pain, you know, or whatever it is they're hiding from or shutting their emotions off to, because it's just about lifting them up. And they, in reality, have the worst self-esteem of anybody in the planet. You know, their self-esteem is extremely low, and this is why they hold on to that. I mean, who knows what happened to them, but I'm not talking about defending the narcissist right now. I'm talking about the survivors of narcissists. Okay, so now in a family situation, let's talk about narcissistic mothers. And I'm going to talk about them only because they are the biggest contributor to one's life, right? I would say both parents, but with the mothers, it's more so. It's a little bit different than the men. The mothers usually will have several children, one or two children. If they do have two children, there'll be a golden child and there'll be a scapegoat child. Now, the golden child is they project everything that's wonderful about them onto that child, down from their appearance, what they do, and usually how they look. They compare themselves. So if the child that they choose will be the one that is most beautiful in their eyes, right? Because they have to compare themselves to them. They have to show that, look at my child. Because they're hoping that you're saying, oh, you're awesome. You know, not the child, but you are. Because you gave birth to this great child. Now, the scapegoat child is the one that's kind of hidden. That's the one who takes the, that's the one that's most neglected. Because all the attention, all the good gifts, all the praise goes to the golden child. The scapegoat child gets the mediocre stuff. You know, they'll toss some things over their way to look like they're good mothers. Like, oh no, I love both my kids, you know. I love all my kids. But they just do it out of knowing what to do. Like, knowing what to say and how to react. But it's not authentic. It's not authentic. And I would say, you know, many times in hindsight, the scapegoat child, even though they're the ones that get the brunt of all the shit, you know, they're the ones who are the blame. They're the ones who, when things go down in the household, there has to be one person to blame. And it's usually the scapegoat. So let's say the parents having a little disagreement with the scapegoat child. This is where the golden child comes in. They pull in reinforcement. No, you're wrong. Let me go get my golden child and she or he will back me up. You know, it's that bully mentality. Well, they'll do that to their children as well. So that's how it works, and that's how the scapegoat gets the brunt of all the abuse. They're the ones who usually end up having problems with drugs. They're usually the ones that end up becoming somewhat loners, you know. But I think in the long run, as they grow up and as they become independent, because usually they can go one or two ways, they could really end up in a messed up emotional situation, not knowing what's wrong with them, thinking that they are nothing but shit. You know, they can't do anything. Or they can go another way and fight for their independence and fight to get out of there. you know, like, I'll show you, I'll make it on my own kind of thing. And usually the scapegoat child comes out the best. They come out on top because they actually escaped the narcissistic parent. The golden child is the one that ends up in trouble because the narcissistic parent will not allow the golden child to leave. They always have to be at a close, somewhat have a hand in their life. If it means destroying their relationships, destroying their marriages, you know, stepping into the middle, trying to take over raising their children, just having an input in everything in their life. And many times marriages break up over this because usually they'll say, oh, what's with your mother? Well, that person doesn't realize their mother is a narcissist and trying to, you know, put their stand within your relationships or with your marriage. And usually they'll end up in divorce or breakup. The sad thing is if the narcissistic parent has a hold on the golden child for a long period of time, they will make sure that that child, as they become adults, they will always have to depend on them, always. So they will never have their independence. They will never just pack up and leave, right? They will always live really close. And I'm not talking about friendship-wise, where, let's say, you raise a child that go off on their own, and then later on they come back. You know, they help you because you're aging. You guys are friends now. You know, have a closer relationship as adults. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where they won't even let them leave far yet to grow into their own person. So those are some of the things. Now off notes off a site. There's a site called Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers. And there's a list that I found interesting. I found this a while back. Let me see if I could find it. They changed the site a little bit. They had these cool drop downs before. Okay, let me see if this is it. Okay, here. This is a listing of all the characteristics of narcissistic mothers. All right, let me see what this is. Everything she does is deniable. Everything the narcissistic mother does is deniable. Criticism and slander is disguised as concern. Selfish manipulation are presented as gifts. Okay, here's one. Many of her put-downs are simply by comparison. She'll talk about how wonderful someone else is or what a wonderful job they did on something you've also done or how highly she thinks of them. The contrast is left up to you. She has let you know that you're no good without saying a word. She'll spoil your pleasure in something by simply congratulating you for it in an angry voice that conveys that she's unhappy. Again, completely deniably. It is impossible to confront someone over their tone of voice, their demeanor, or the way they look at you. But once your narcissistic mother has trained you, she can promise terrible punishment without a word. As a result, you're always afraid, always in the wrong, and can never exactly put your finger on why. Yeah, that's the part I was talking about. You're kind of trained, you know, a person growing up would be kind of trained, like when not to say anything, how not to speak up. If you do try to talk to them, let's say you're trying to talk to them one-on-one, and you start getting emotional and start crying, they will do everything they can to get you to stop crying, right? Because either they'll focus it on them, they'll minimize your pain, they'll say, oh, it doesn't hurt that bad, it's okay, you're fine, you know, just let it go. That's the empathy part. That's the lack of empathy. They cannot understand how you're in pain because they're in pain. Their pain is greater than your pain. You could be 5 years old and you could ride a bike and fall down and scrape your whole knee open. Okay? You could scrape it open and cry and tell her how much it hurts. It doesn't hurt. Here, put a Band-Aid on it. You're fine. Because mommy, look what mommy did. When mommy did this, this was pain because I needed stitches. So she has to one up the 5-year-old, right? And pretty much, and who knows, you know, like a normal parent would be, okay, let's say the knee doesn't hurt that bad, but your child is really crying and really hurt. Chances are something else went on. But the narcissistic mother will not dig that deep because they don't want to be bothered with it, you know, because they got their mind on their own stuff. So, like, I would be, okay, what's going on? And later on you find out little Johnny came and tried to push your son around and did this and this to him before he fell. So he's actually crying and his pain is actually from his feelings being hurt because he was bullied right before by the neighbor kid who's supposed to be his best friend. Okay, so with the narcissistic parent, they will never get to that point. They will never be able to help ever any of their children deal with their pain. It will always be on the surface. It will always be that way. So as one grows up, you start training yourself, you know, not to open up. You train yourself not to trust people, not to do this and this because of the reaction of the, you know, the narcissistic people in your family. Okay. Another one, she violates your boundaries. Okay, she violates your boundaries. You feel an extension of her. Your property is given away without consent, sometimes in front of you. Your food is eaten off your plate and given to others. Your property may be repossessed for no reason. Your time is committed without consulting you, and opinions... She loves, okay. Oh, wow. Okay, I don't even want to go there. I remember something. Okay. You are discussed in the presence. Okay, you are discussed in your presence as though you're not there. She keeps tab on your bodily functions, humiliates you by divulging the information that she gleams over, especially when to demonstrate her devotion and highlight herself. So, in other words, she'll tell strangers, she'll tell perfect strangers, okay, let's say, especially with the golden child, of their achievements, or, well, my little Susie does this, and oh, she likes that, and she doesn't like this, and she'll divulge personal information about the child just to show that she herself is a wonderful mother. You know, it all comes with a price. And that, too, that could be devastating to even the golden child, you know, who gets praised all the time. Because by the time they meet the mother's so-called friends, they know everything about them. She told them everything. She had no empathy for the child's privacy or respect for the child to keep her mouth shut about her kids, right? To keep it private, whatever needs to be private, private. And the way they say it, they're like, "Paul, you shouldn't be upset because I was telling them how wonderful you were." They don't understand that that's not what happened. they use them to manipulate another person to look at them differently. So it's all about perception. It's all about how they want the outside world to see them. And they will spend days on this. They will, as far as manipulation, it's planned out way ahead of time. Like, there's always a plan. If they have a plan, if this goes wrong, then they'll say this. If this goes wrong, then they'll do this. There's a backup plan for everything. And then you got your narcissistic supply, just in case it doesn't work, so you can draw the supply in as your backup to say, oh, tell so-and-so that I'm right. You know, tell this person I'm right. And it's exhausting. It's exhausting. And in a family situation, for the children that are raised in this, it's so damning to them, you know. It's abusive, and that's where it becomes an abuse. It's just a vicious cycle. Okay. Here's another one. She favoritizes. This is what I was talking about, the golden. Narcissistic mothers commonly choose one, sometimes more, child to be the golden child, and one, sometimes more, to be the scapegoat. The narcissist identifies the golden child and provides privileges to him or her as long as the golden child does what she wants. The golden child has to be cared for by everyone else in the family. The scapegoat has no needs and instead gets to do the caring. The golden child can do nothing wrong. Scapegoat is always at fault. This creates division between the children, one of whom is the largest investment in this mother, being wise and wonderful, while the other one hates her. The division will foster the narcissist with lies and blatantly unfair and favoritizing behavior. The golden child will defend the mother and indirectly abuse the other. So that's part of the dynamics. That's what I mean. Like, they have to have the backup. To divide and conquer is done with the children, you know, if they have more than one child, because they need that supply. They need to have that at all times. Okay. Here. Another one is a liar. She is a liar in too many ways to count. Anytime she talks about something that is emotionally significant to her, it is a fair bet that she's lying. Lying is one way that creates conflict in the relationships and the lives of those around her. She'll lie to them about what other people have said and done or how they feel. She'll lie about a relationship with them, about your behavior, about your situation, in order to inflate herself and determine her credibility. The narcissist is very careful about how she lies. To outsiders, she'll lie thoughtfully and deliberately, always in a way that could be covered up if confronted with her lie. She spins what you say rather than make something up wholesale. She puts dishonest interpretations on things that you actually did. If she recently done something particularly, she may engage in a preventative lie. She lies in advance to discount what you might say. Then when you talk about what she did, she'll cut you off and said, I already know all about it. Your mother told me, you know, because she's so careful about her deniability. It is hard to catch her in her lies. Okay. To you, she'll lie blatantly. She'll claim to be unable to remember bad things she's done, even if she's done them recently, and even if it's very memorable. Of course, if you try to jog her memory and recount the circumstances, she'll say, oh, that was a long time ago, or you have to bring up old grudges. Your conversations with her are full of brush-offs, lies, she doesn't respect you enough to bother making it sound good. For example, she'll start with a self-serving lie. if I don't take you as an independent on my taxes, I'll lose $3,000. You refute her lie by saying, no, $3,000 is the amount of the dependent exemption. You'll lose about $800. Her response, is that what I said? Now you're playing the game. You can't win. Like, so this will go around in circles until the person's right. Let me see if there's something. The blame. Blamer. Okay. She blames. She'll blame you for everything that isn't right in her life or for what others do or whatever has happened. Always, she blames you for her abuse. You made her do it. If only you weren't so difficult. You upset her so much that she couldn't think straight. Things are hard for her. This blaming is often so subtle that all you know is that you thought you were wronged and now you feel guilty. Your brother beats you and her response is how uncivilized children are. Your boyfriend dumped you and she can't understand. After all, she sees herself, she herself has seen how difficult you are to love. Let's see. This part. Narcissists are masters of multitasking, as the example shows spontaneously. She's lying. Lying. She knows what she's done wrong, and she knows your reaction is reasonable. Manipulating. That means she's making you look like the bad guy for objecting to her cruelties. By being selfish, she doesn't mind you making you feel horrible as long as she gets her way. Blaming. She did something wrong, but it's your fault. Projecting. Her petty, small, childish behavior has become yours. Putting on a self-pity drama, she's the martyr who believes in the best in you, and you let her drown. And, all right. Another one is she'll destroy your relationships. Okay, as a child or anything of a narcissist, they will. They'll destroy your relationships. They'll destroy your relationships with your siblings. They will destroy your relationships with your boyfriends, your girlfriends, your school friends. And anything that could make you more independent of them. Anything that could draw you away and see them for who they really are. You know, if a boyfriend comes along, let's say you have a boyfriend, and the boyfriend's like, yo, man, I don't like your mother. You know, she's like overbearing. She's like here all the time. Like, why can't she leave us alone? Why can't, you know, this relationship is about me and you. Why are you asking your mother? Well, out of habit, the child will tell the parent, you know, because of the way they were raised. They're in fear, right? So they'll tell the parent. Somehow the parent's going to make it seem like this person, oh, you don't need to be seeing this person, he's a jerk, do this, and she will break up the relationship. And if you're married, it's the same. She can cause a divorce because she will put the golden child, it's usually the golden child, to make a choice. It's either that person or your mother, you know. By this time, at that age, the person's not strong enough. If they've been, especially if they're the golden child, they are not strong enough to stand up against the narcissist because they don't know their illness. They don't understand what's happening. All that person knows is they're indecisive. They don't know why they can't make a decision without that parent making it for them. You know, stuff like that. Like, if you dive into this stuff, it's really deep. And I did bring it up because it's a big thing. I mean, there's a lot of people that really don't understand what's going on with them and don't realize that maybe a product of a narcissist, of, you know, who raised them or that's close to them, who was with them, because they are being abused, you know, especially if the individual shows narcissistic rage. And the rage comes when the truth is right about to show, when the truth is just about to be revealed, these people will flip out. And this is a good thing to know, like when you go to court. If you end up having to go to court with a narcissist, just say the truth. Just tell the truth straight out, be calm and tell the truth. And don't add anything, just keep it factual and truthful. And as you speak and you just do it plain, the narcissist will flip out in court every single time. So it's like, that's the game. There's a whole book out there, if you're going through divorce with against a narcissist, there is a book out there to get that will help, because especially while you go through that, they're going to bring in all kinds of stuff. They're, oh, well, this person did this, and oh, at home they do this, and oh, you know, and then when they do this and they wear that, they're going to try everything. That's all part of the manipulation. But it is toxic, and it's draining on any individual who has to deal with this type of personality. Okay. Now, here are some characteristics of somebody who is raised with a narcissistic parent, right? Here are some. Let me get this so I could say it correctly. Okay. One of the things that these types of individuals do is gaslight. And what it says here is, gaslighting is one of the most vicious, nasty, effective forms of emotional and psychological abuse. They will make the victim feel as if they're going crazy. If your perceptions of reality are constantly denied, and above all, denied by your mother of all people, the person you look up to and who you think knows everything, it is very, very head-wrecking and crazy-making. This is where you start to feel like something's wrong with you. And many times you start seeing this exhibited in teenagers, you know, when they start getting into junior high, high school, some of these behaviors, if they're raised with one. Let's see. Read what this person wrote. The crazy making can just be a side effect, and the gaslighting is done in order to preserve the narcissistic mother's vision of herself as perfect, without her actually having to do all the hard stuff that would make her perfect. This person writes, I was so sad on my wedding day. My mother didn't see fit to tell me once that I looked well. I had waited so many years to hear this. I thought the day of all days it would happen, but it did not happen, not once in the whole day. But when I shared this hurt with her afterwards, she literally yelled at me, not at first, but when I tried to insist otherwise, and she said, that she had so told me I looked well. So she was self-absorbed and self-centered to say anything nice to me, and she, too, convinced herself of her own wonderful motherness to even entertain the possibility that she didn't say it. So that's what I was talking about before, like, the empathy. This is the empathy. You can't say, ah, you look beautiful. You look so beautiful, you know, and then you cry, like when my son graduated. I was fine until I saw him come down walking toward me in his gown. Then I lost it. You know, that's normal. That's normal empathy. But then the narcissistic parent will be like, oh yeah, that's my degree. You know, look what I did. I helped them. I helped them get that because my kid is brilliant because they're part of me. You know, that's their thinking. They can't do it. There's lack of empathy. And empathy is needed just as a human being and an individual for relationships. And without it, there's nothing. So it's kind of like an empty ego. Let's say there's the person's soul, and let's say the outer side is the ego. That ego is so thick. There's nothing inside. It's shallow. It's emptiness. There's nothing. And that's part of their mental stuff. I mean, I don't know what happened to them. Like I said, right now, I don't care. Okay? Because I'm talking about this part of it. All right. So that one's gaslighting. I wanted to look at something else. They kind of changed their site, but there was this funny thing. I think I read it on my podcast, actually, a while back. So, let me see if I can find... I gotta see if I could find it. It was a funny thing. Well, here's some signs for the individual who could have had problems. All right. Oh, maybe. Hold on a second. Let me find it. Well, here are some things that individuals who are raised with these type of people may feel about themselves. I'm going to say under we, that's on here. This is for a daughter. We perhaps still feel like a little girl, and we're probably scared to own or assess our own power. And that keeps us from feeling powerless, too. We've had years of being told we're too sensitive, and possibly we are now. We have difficulty setting boundaries, whether it's with our family or with others. We may very well be overly fearful of authority or people being angry with us. We are worried about whether we ourselves are narcissistic. We may be having body issues with overweight or fear of gaining weight. We may find ourselves still experiencing huge fear of her, no matter how old we are and or how assertive in other parts of our lives. We may find out if we're still trying in vain, of course, to get her approval or her attention. We may want to severely limit our contact with her or even cut off all contact, but be worried and confused about that. Okay. Self-care. I wish I could find that list. I hate that they changed this site. They're adding a site, actually. It's about sons of narcissistic mothers. And I noticed that one's actually a new one. You know, some of the things are like never feeling good enough, always feeling guilty, negative self-talk. But some ways to combat this. Well, I don't want to get into that yet. I'm going to take a small break so I could grab my notes on this because I don't want to say it incorrectly. But this is just from experience. You know, I talk about this a lot because I grew up with this. I grew up with an individual like this. This is why I know so much about it. But I did not understand this until late in my 30s. Like, I could not figure it out. Like, what the heck, you know? Because it is part of that crazy making thing, and it's still, I took the steps I needed to take to rid myself of these personalities of, you know, when I come in contact with somebody that I know is one, I completely cut myself off from them, and which I'm so thankful for, you know, I'm really thankful for, but a lot of people don't understand that that's what they're coming in contact with, especially if you are, were raised around it and you can't figure out what you're doing wrong. Many times it's not the child, it's the abuse. The abuse is so subtle because you're not being hit. You're not being yelled at, called names. You're not being abused in an obvious way. It's very, very subtle because it's a play on words. It's a play on your emotions. And if you're young and you don't know any better, you know, that's who they choose. They choose the ones that are most vulnerable, the ones that are going to believe them, the ones that they can manipulate. When they do come across somebody that's strong and that can see right through them, they will do everything in their power at first to try to change that person's mind. When they can't, then they're the enemy. You know, they are the enemy. They will go after, they will try to demean their character, anything to make themselves look like the they were correct or that it's not them, you know, because if someone openly denies them, it exposes their personality and it starts shattering their ego, and that's the most devastating thing that could be done to a narcissist. It's very, very rare that they get help. Very rare. Like some of us will say, yeah, we're kind of narcissistic. I really need to change that, you know. That's the normal part of you. That's like, okay, my head's swelling up because I won this prize and I'm awesome and I just made this record and my painting just won a prize. Yeah, you're bragging and stuff and you're like, I need to back off because my friends are getting pissed off, you know. And that's the normal behavior. But for a narcissist, they can't do, it's impossible. It's literally impossible. They will hold on to it so tight. And this is where it starts going to personality disorders and stuff. It goes to another extreme, you know, because the whole goal of their life is to hold on to this. They will never see it. They will never see it. So this is why I'm not bringing this up in favor of the narcissist themselves. Because, like, for me, I believe, unlike other mental disorders where it's chemical and stuff, a personality disorder, yeah, they may have been neglected when they were growing up, or they may have been overly praised when they were growing up. It could be one or the other that caused this, but I always feel like as adults, when things happen to you, bad things, whether it's being molested or raped or anything, I'm not saying to forget what happened to you, of course not, but when you become an adult, you take over, you know, you take over, and you need to, be strong and say, you know what, yeah, that was messed up, that really fucked me up, but damn it, I'm not gonna let that ruin my life, and you do everything you can, you get counseling, you get it together. You know, you get it together for your future. You get it together for your family. And you swallow your pride and you get it done. You know, so I believe as adults, normal thinking adults, everybody has the power to do that. So for me, I have no tolerance to hear somebody say, well, when I was 5 years old, you know, my mom took this away from me. I just never got it. Well, you know what? But okay, this is going on a whole different thing, you know, watching Hoarders and all this stuff. But so for the narcissist, I feel the same way. Because if enough people are telling them, look, you got a problem, and they still refuse to see themselves, then I don't have any sympathy. The first step is you're never going to change them. It's never going to happen. You're never, as a child, or if you're trying to mend your relationship with your grandma, your aunt, your mother, or whoever raised you, the hardest part is to realize that you're never going to have the parent that has empathy for you, that loves you unconditionally. You're never going to have that. It's always going to have a string attached. They may say it. They may say it, but watch what happens. Let's say a parent who sees themselves in, let's say a mother who sees themselves in the daughter. Daughter's beautiful, right? Daughter's beautiful. She's young. And let's say she starts getting older. She starts having a couple of kids. Her body starts going. The mother will eventually ignore and neglect that golden child, because now that child no longer resembles them, right? If they look at that child, they're going to think, oh, I'm this way. Or, you know, they're not going to look at the soul of their kids. They're unable to. It sounds pretty drastic, but it's a very important thing, because it's affected a lot of our society. You know, we have a lot of teenagers and a lot of young adults that are messed up, because we do have a very narcissistic society. It's a me, me, me. And like I said, to some extent, it's normal, but it does cross over, and these people don't get help. So it gets passed down to one or two people in the next generation if no one points it out or nobody realizes what's going on. Let's say you're of age now, you know, and hopefully you're young. If you're in your 20s and can spot this, and not waiting until you're in your 30s or 40s. But if you could spot this and figure out and see the behavior that is being presented to you, and realize it's not you. It's not you. You did not do anything. Like you're saying, when you're an empath versus somebody with no empathy, it's difficult. It's difficult to fight, because they are used to doing this all the time to different people. They always have a supply. There's always a supply. There's a supply of people to worship them. There's a supply of people for them to go after. There's a supply to just keep it going for them continuously. They will always have drama. Always. They cannot not have drama, because it has to be about them. Everything has to be about them. Any conversation, if the conversation is not about them, they will twist it to be about them. Some way, somehow. And it doesn't matter if it's positive or negative. But once you figured it out that, yeah, maybe that's happening to me, you know, the first thing you got to realize is that they're sick. And that there's nothing you can do. You could love them, like, let's say it's your mom, you know, and you just love them. But the hard reality is, it's kind of like what he said, you got to get tough. You got to start thinking like they do. You got to understand the way they think. That's the first key, is to educate yourself. Read everything you can on it. Pinpoint all the behaviors, you know. Try to understand as much as you can. And so that way, when you look at them, they're no longer a threat. You're seeing, they're exposed. You're seeing right through their ego. And you're seeing them. Okay, that's the first step. And it's kind of hard, too, because especially if it's somebody that you grew up with and you loved. But this is for your survival. This is for your health, for you to grow and have a good life, where you're not afraid to speak up, where you're not afraid to stand up for yourself and grow, you know. And you need to get this person away from you. And that's the hardest part, is especially when you had this false affection for from a parent because they're unable to give it to you. You know, it's something that we all yearn for, and you grow up without it, and it's, and you can't figure out why, you know, why you're not feeling loved, you know, why you feel abandoned, because technically you have been, you've been abandoned, and the hardest step, the next step, after you educate yourself on their, the way they think, the next step is to come to terms that you didn't have, you don't have a parent. Yeah, technically you have your mom, your dad, or you got your aunt, your grandma, everybody, but you got to divorce, you've got to grieve that, no, I didn't have a mother. You did not have a mother. You know, the kind of mother that you thought you did, she's not there. That grandma that you thought should have been loving and making you cookies all the time, but instead, you know, nitpicked the way you look, if you gained any weight, if you have any imperfections, she's your grandma, but you didn't have that grandma, the grandma you were hoping for, and you never will. You will never get that approval. You will never, nothing you could ever do will bring that type of personality out of them for you. It's gone. So you got to grieve it. You got to grieve and say goodbye, you know, as if you lost something. And if you're a daughter of a mother who's done this for you, and this is the hardest part, you know, because of course you want your mother there. You want your mother there to help you with your kids, to teach you about the things of being a woman, you know, to be there. They can't because it's still about them. They will never get to that stage, you know, where they're passing on their wisdom to you and living to make sure that you make it. They don't have that. So if you're too close to them, and let's say you have children and a husband, it's best to leave. I hate to say that. It's best to separate yourself as much as possible. And this site talks about that. It depends on how bad it is, okay? It depends on how, what kind of grip this person may have on your life. There can be low contact or no contact. The no contact is extreme. You know, I don't like it when people disown family members. Like, you know, sons disowning, or fathers disowning their sons if they find out they're gay. Mothers disowning their daughters because she dated a black man. Things like that. That's horrible, you know, disowning your family. But when it comes to this type of situation and you've been raised in this type of abuse, it doesn't mean you don't love them. But you got to look at it as you're doing it for your self-preservation, to protect yourself and to grow up so that you can grow, you know. So low contact, I will get it from the site so I don't mess it up. Okay, another way of going low contact is to withdraw emotionally. You might physically see her often, but just don't share too much about yourself. Keep your conversation light, superficial, and safe. Don't tell her your good news, or else she's going to just rain on it, your parade, right? Don't tell her if you're bad news, because she'll feed off it. This woman says, I remember when I used to still see my mother. I could almost literally feel myself folding in, hiding into a shell when I went into her company. My whole face would close down. My expression became more muted and passive. My natural warmth and enthusiasm got put away. In no sense of the word was it me who was in her presence. So low contact is just keeping everything to a minimum, because everything you say, everything you share is used by the narcissistic parent. It's if things are happening bad for you, they are going to be delighted. They may not show it, and maybe they think, oh, good for you, honey, but deep inside, they're delighted because it just made them look better. There's like the guy was saying, there's no boundaries. There's none. They don't see it. They can't empathize. Like the man that he was talking about with the son dying. They're so full of themselves, they can't see it. They can't see what they're doing and stop, you know, and say, oh my gosh, what am I doing? My child is dying. I need to knock this off. They can't. All right. No contact is, here, okay. No contact means that you totally cut off all contact with the narcissistic mother and enabling father. Usually there's an enabling father. So, yeah, I forgot about that. If you have a narcissistic mother, the man is usually enabling. You know, it will be a husband that just sits there and goes, yeah, honey, and pretty much gives them the supply they need. You know, they're there to tell them that they're right. They're there, no matter how ridiculous they are, this person will see it, but they'll still enable them. It's just like an enabler for an alcoholic. They'll tell them everything they want to hear to just to keep them from having their rage. All right. This is very big, important subject. So this is a long page of information. Okay. No contact is a very big decision. It has huge challenges, as I share below. The first step to no contact is terrifying, but realization that it is possible. Over the years, I've often longed to cut off contact with my parents, but cultural programming made me think it wasn't. I mean, you can't leave your family. The fear was so strong. All right, and the guilt. All right. Okay. In fact, separating from an engulfing mother may be difficult. She's going to feel threatened at the prospect of losing all her narcissistic supply she gets from you. She may try all sorts of tricks to keep you enmeshed with her, such as suddenly becoming nice and seeming to become the mother you always wanted. This is very hard to resist. It's like all your dreams come together, and just when you finally accept it wasn't going to happen. But be warned, if she is a true narcissistic mother, then she can never really change. As soon as you're back involved with her, she will drop the nice and revert to how she always was. She may become even nastier and try to punish you for even trying to attempt to leave her. If you get sucked in by the nice act, don't blame yourself. She's very good at what she does, and we're programmed to want her love so badly. And don't forget that you get as many chances as you need and want in the no contact. The joys of no contact. So, no contact can be tough to do, but the gifts are immeasurable. I have spoken to single daughters who regret it. I haven't spoken to a single daughter who regrets it. Indeed, most are bubbling over with joy over it. For myself, I'm experiencing more self-esteem, more joy, less pressure, less negative thinking, and more freedom. There has been some sadness, don't get me wrong, and bereavement and grief and anger, but it's truly been a journey. But the gifts have been so worth it.